The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Taxes Show.
I'm the announcer, and I've known Eric since he was a big nobody.
In fact, I'm one of the people he stepped on as he climbed the ladder of success.
And now my former friend, Eric Metaxas.
Hey there, folks. Welcome to Hour 2. What a day. What a week. What a country. What a year. In a couple of minutes, I'm talking to Mario Murillo, not to be confused with Mario Perillo of Perillo Tours. Mario Murillo is an amazing Christian minister, and he's going to talk about some fiery stuff. But before that, I want to go to some really non-fiery stuff, like election voter fraud in Michigan, for example. I got a phone call yesterday from someone who is the son of two family friends of Suzanne's and mine, and he told me that he had seen voter fraud, had seen shenanigans in Michigan. I was horrified. I said, would you please come on my program so people can hear what you told me? My guest is Drew Huerta. Drew, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, so you're a very close friend of the senatorial candidate John James, who supposedly lost in Michigan.
Supposedly is the key word there.
Well, Trump supposedly lost Michigan. You were there in campaign headquarters. Where were you where you saw what you saw?
Well, the days are all blending together. Tuesday night, I was at John's family business, where the Victory Party was scheduled to be. We were watching the results come in, watching the trends come throughout the country come in, and were quite impressed with what the results were. Campaigns are looking at voter turnout. They have all the numbers. They're watching it. We did it in 2018. We were watching the results come in through Michigan. They were looking very well. Very, very good.
They were looking great, and I was following it. And in case people don't know, John James is a Black American. I've heard him on Fox a couple times. He's just so impressive. I thought, this is fantastic. A senator from Michigan, a Black American. Who is this guy? And it looked to me like he was winning. So you're telling me you saw the same thing, and then something happened.
The voting just stopped, or the counting stopped, and it stopped in Wisconsin roughly right around the same time. The mainstream media, including networks that, you know, I often watch, started to have special guests and pundits on, and there was just a lull. We were waiting at around 3:30. I said, you know, someone's got to sleep because we're going to be up again.
3:30. A.M.
Yeah, 3:30 a.m.
Okay, so but the same thing happened, didn't it, in Pennsylvania? Like suddenly they just said we're gonna stop.
Yeah, it just
and
was like
everybody's thinking, what do you mean you're gonna stop? Okay, so 3:30 a.m., you're still awake, you're still wanting to know what's going on. What do you do?
Tried to go to sleep and wait for the morning because we knew that this wasn't gonna end, and woke up to a call from an attorney who. A campaign attorney that said, we need Michigan voters to come down to TFW, which is where they were counting all of the absentee.
What's TFW?
It's where they were, in Detroit, they were counting all of the absentee votes that were supposedly coming in.
Okay, so this was in Detroit. I think I misstated it. I said something on my Twitter about Milwaukee, obviously, which is the wrong state.
Milwaukee has the exact similar thing that occurred. Milwaukee, I believe they're up to, in Milwaukee City, about 89% voter turnout. which is unheard of in Milwaukee. So like, I believe when Obama won, there was maybe close to 70% voter turnout. And keep in mind, Cleveland, what they're finding is Cleveland, the voting is flat. It's consistent with prior years. So you have to, you can't, like, if
it makes no sense, something is fishy when Obama, who was the biggest voter turnout, especially among Black Americans, suddenly you're telling me, oh, this year was 89%. So, but let's forget about that. Let's go back to Detroit. You go down. What time is it when you go down to be a poll watcher, to be a citizen watching the counting? What time of the day?
There is probably around 9:30 in the morning.
In the morning. Yes. So you go in to do the volunteer job of an American citizen, and what happens?
Many things. We were first off outnumbered. The opposition, or the Democrats, had about, I would say, already about 200 poll challengers in there. There was roughly 30 of us. A colleague of mine found 500 ballots that were not linked to registered voters.
Okay, so finds 500 ballots that have been counted.
They were about to be counted.
They were about to be counted, and a colleague of yours says these are not legitimate because these names are not on the voting rolls, or these are not legitimate. And what happened?
But the other funny thing is, they ended up having two systems. So there's an electronic system where you were looking up to check if the voter was there. And then if the name wasn't there, they said, oh, here's a printed list of additional voters. And then you had to check that list. They didn't like when I just asked a question, how do you get a printed list that's not in the electronic system? Are you using multiple systems? There was no answers to these questions as it was going on. So as we would go in, I was watching the tabulators. It was a very loose system. They would come and hand the ballots to someone with a tabulator. The ballots would be run through, and then those ballots were supposed to go into these boxes that were unlocked just right behind. And there's just a mass confusion going on of, like, here's the I mean, there's probably about 1,000 different counters that are, you know, doing their job, and a lot of them are doing it well. But there were some, like, I got out my camera to try to take a picture. No pictures can be taken. They warned me, told me I was going to have to leave. And then
what we haven't made clear is Michigan is Democrat controlled.
Yes.
And so the people who told you mind your own business, who called you a racist, you didn't mention that yet, but yes, those people were Democrats.
Right. And, you know, to me, it was like, I felt like it was a ballot plantation, because what you had was, you had a lot of African-American Black poll people doing their jobs, working on the polls. And then all of the challengers were elite Democratic white people. And so when I questioned, you know, these ballots were run through, and I was questioning it, trying to do it, I was called a racist. And I'm like, what are you talking about?
And you're best friends with the Black senatorial candidate, but they called you a racist. Isn't that sweet? That's where we are in America today. The fact that you were willing to question something and then were called a racist, you know, that's as close to violence as it gets. It's an amazing thing that you are there to do the job of the American people, which is to oversee a process to make sure it's fair. And when you did your job, you were called a racist. Were you called a racist by a white person?
Yeah, of course. That was overseeing what the African Americans counting.
What happened to the 500 ballots that your friends said were illegitimate?
I don't know what ended up happening to those. I think that they were challenged. You know, we were filling out poll challenge forms that could be used in a lawsuit later. The biggest thing is, and, you know, I was looking at Twitter and saw your feed just talking about a coup and that there are issues here. And the reason why I contacted you and wanted to let you know is this is happening. It did happen. And, you know, as a dad of a 4- and 3-year-old and one on the way, I don't want to leave an America like this. I want my kids to be able to know what it is to go and vote. And I'm not seeing it on the mainstream, any of the mainstream media, even Fox, like what is actually going on here. And so I think that it's really important for people like you to just keep this on people's radar, that this is actually what is happening.
Yes. And when you told me your story, I just said to myself, just the fact that you were so uncomfortable with what you were seeing and that you were made to feel uncomfortable, called a racist when you questioned legitimately, politely, I just think that that is unbelievable. We didn't get into the weeds. We're out of time. But I just want to say, Drew, I am just proud of you for willing to be able to come on this program and say these things. Give my love to your mom and dad, and we will be in touch. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
If y'all feel that it's real.
Hey, folks, enjoy this interview recorded by Eric with Mario Murillo before the big election.
Hey there, folks. Welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show. I wasn't clear who my guest was today. For a moment, I thought it was Morris Cirullo. And unfortunately, I just found out he's deceased. He cannot be with us on the program today. Then I thought we were going to get Mario Perillo of Perillo Tours. He's turned the company over to his son, Mario Perillo Jr., but he is also not my guest. Who is my guest? My guest is Mario Murillo. Yes, he's the author of a book I have it in my hand, Vessels of Fire and Glory, Breaking Demonic Spells Over America to Release a Great Awakening. That crazy talk is right up my alley. Mario Murillo, welcome to the program.
Eric, it's an honor. I've read your books. I've waited a long time to be able to have a conversation with you, and I'm very honored to be here.
Well, first of all, I got to ask you, where are you? You look like you're in some kind of a 3D. I won't even get into it. It's just like you've got a crazy background behind you right there. I'm only hoping it's virtual. Your book, Vessels of Fire and Glory, when you say breaking demonic spells over America to release a great awakening, there are tons of folks listening to this program who don't understand that. It sounds very religious and strange to them. I just want to say I do understand that. And I think it's vital that people understand that everything ultimately is spiritual. We can't pretend that we're living in a secular world. God is real, and he's the God of history. First of all, before we get into the book, Fire and Glory, Vessels of Fire and Glory, what is your background? Where did you grow up and how did you get to be where you are today?
I am a native born and raised in the city of San Francisco, and that's the background here, the virtual background. And I went through the revolution, the Marxist revolution, in the early days. I ended up at the University of California, where I thought I was there to be educated. And in the midst of it all, I began a student Christian ministry, and it exploded to 2,000 students. And that really was on the University of California campus, the chapter of the Jesus movement that was sweeping the West Coast at the time. So we confronted everything that America is facing right now, all the ideas of Marxism, socialism, and Christianity and the gospel. So I saw it vividly. And when I say breaking demonic holds, I told my publisher, I might have worded it differently, but I believe that there is a blanket of deception that has settled on the church where they're abusing, for example, Romans 13 to understand their appropriate resistance to the evil of government. They don't understand it, and Christians have been too apathetic about it. And we're in the election of our lifetime right now.
Now, you know, because you read my Bonhoeffer book, that this was what Bonhoeffer was saying, right? You have all these Lutherans going, you know, Romans, 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 and we're supposed to obey the governing authorities. And he said, well, yeah, but no, if the governing authorities are Adolf Hitler and they're murdering millions of Jews, we have to look at the whole council of Scripture. And there are tons of Christians today who are either not voting or who are voting for Joe Biden. And I want to say to them, I get it. It's a free country. But do you understand what you're doing? I feel a lot of people don't. There's a lot of anger. What do you say to folks out there about where we are spiritually as a nation?
Well, I think that we worshiped at the altar of church growth. And so instead of producing vibrant Bible-based disciples, we were content to mass produce people that had a tendency toward God. And so they became illiterate biblically, and they didn't know how to defend their viewpoint. Like, you, let's take Romans 13. If you take it contextually, there's a phrase in there that says, the authorities that are of God are not a threat to the righteous. That should have been a clue. That's what Bonhoeffer understood. You see, when you say legitimate government, let's take, for example, Gavin Newsom in California. His shutdown of the church is illegal. It's unconstitutional. So when the church tries to stay open, of course we need to take all the health precautions we're supposed to. But when the church tries to stay open, they're obeying the law. It's Gavin Newsom that's disobeying the law. And so when Peter looked at them and said, we would rather obey God than man, in the book of Acts, he's saying, you, the Sanhedrin, have hijacked the Jewish religion. That's what Jesus was saying. You've taken the traditions of men and taught them as if they were the word of God. So the church needs to quit seeing itself as civil, disobedient rebels. We are the ones that are obeying the law, and the righteous authority that God set in America through the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution is what's being violated. So we're obeying the law. They're not. So pastors that hide behind abuse of Romans 13 are hideously robbing the church of her moment right now. And, you know, one of the things that I really feel strongly about is the important, you know, I know we're supposed to talk about our book, my book, but I want to mention your book on Wilberforce. Because this is the hour we're living in. Not every Christian belongs behind the pulpit. Not every Christian belongs in ministry. And somehow we have turned Sunday morning into the most underutilized talent pool in the history of the church. We ought to be engaged. Why are we lamenting what happened to social media? Why are we complaining that all of the media is left wing? It isn't so much that the devil took that as much as the church abdicated her righteous role. The idea that we are, should not be politically involved is a new idea.
I say the same thing over and over every opportunity I get. It's a scandal, really.
It is.
We in the church are to blame. I mean, if you're only talking about how many Christians in California did not vote in the last election, if you're upset with Governor Gavin Newsom, it's only because evangelicals did not vote because they have a bad theology, which is a fancy way of saying a diabolical theology, an antichrist theology. They may be good people, but they've been totally bamboozled. And we are that way in the nation. Before we get into your book, Vessels of Fire and Glory, where do you see this country going? Has God spoken to you about this election or about where we are? I don't know if you move in the prophetic, but I'm always fascinated to ask those questions.
Well, the reason I'm enjoying this so much right now is because I know that you're not just an author, but you're a historian. America is a miracle. No one can explain, like Israel, the United States history, warts and all, is supernatural. It's supernatural how this consortium of thinkers, businessmen, philosophers, and Christian pastors sat down and decided we're going to dump the British Empire. We're going to form a nation based on the idea of constitutional republic representative government. It's a miracle. 15 times in our history that I could name, we have been miraculously saved from extinction. And the thing that I felt, Eric, that was so key in my life is one night in prayer, I collided with God's fierce intention to spare this nation, no matter what, but that we can choose whether that mercy will be expressed in cataclysmic upheaval or in just straight on repentance. But God is not going to let the left have America. I'm not saying it's going to be fun, but I say it this way. Christianity is going to survive without America. but America will not survive without Christianity. So the collision in God's heart is this: I will have my witness in America, and I'm going to bulldoze whatever wall. And we hear all this stuff about Donald Trump and how rude and crude he is. Well, we lost our right to a Mr. Rogers president. We sinned against God. And so God in his mercy sent the wrecking ball. And I, for one, I've met people from New York. So Donald Trump doesn't scare me in any way, shape or form. But I believe it is essential that as Christians, that our brains are not checked at the door when we get saved. They're enhanced. Our intelligence is expanded. And what's missing is something I feel Satan did to the church, the modern American church. You know, and I saw it in a strange way. And I'll just take a moment because I think this is a real important issue. When I talk about church growth, just as grace, cheap grace, as Bonhoeffer referred to it, intoxicated the Lutheran church, American church was intoxicated and fell to a temptation. And ironically, it was the second temptation of Christ in the wilderness, where the devil said, if you bow down and worship me, I will give you all the kingdoms of the world. Well, the real temptation there was the human side of Christ to be able to save humanity without enduring the cross. And the preaching of the cross is always the first thing that Satan goes after when he wants to modernize and neutralize and basically sideline Christianity.
Investors seeking steady cash flow, ready to diversify? NRIA has grown to be one of the nation's leading specialists and offers 10% annualized monthly payouts with bonuses targeted at 18 to 21%. That's right. You could receive steady 10% return monthly payments with bonuses. As their slogan says, they specialize in realty investing done right. You can even use your 401k or IRA to invest. NRIA's 15-year track record and $1.2 billion in new construction development backs you. Learn how you can invest in this hard asset real estate cash flow fund today and receive 10% annualized monthly payouts with bonuses. This is something savvy investors should research and consider. Call now 800-700-5483. That's 800-700-5483 or visit NRIA.net.
An offer to buy or sell any security is only made by our private placement memorandum. Read it first. See us at NRIA.net.
Folks, I got some embarrassing news to share with you, but you know what? This is just the kind of a show where I don't care. I'm willing to lay my heart, you know, on the line. Here's the issue. Mike Lindell with MyPillow, you may notice that I have a bobblehead of him near me. He's here to remind all of us that when you go to MyPillow.com, you get whopping discounts if you use the code Eric, okay? Now, there are a lot of people who haven't done that, and we have your names here. And Chris Himes and Albin pointed out to me that there's like three pages of you whose first name is Eric. You yourself, I mean, that's humiliating for me that even though your name is Eric, you're still not willing to use the code Eric. I mean, if you don't want to use it because it's my name, use it because it's your name. But the point is that I see who you are, and I just feel humiliated by this. Please go to MyPillow.com. It's okay, Mike. It's going to be okay. Go to MyPillow.com. Use the code Eric. You're going to get whopping savings and really high quality products. Did I mention that? Thank you.
Trying to find a way of making you mine. Long before you started coming on strong with me.
We continue now with Eric's interview with Mario Murillo, recorded before the big election.
Folks, I'm talking to Mario Murillo. The book is Vessels of Fire and Glory, the subtitle, Breaking Demonic Spells Over America to Release a Great Awakening. You just said something, Mario. The temptation, the satanic temptation from Eden until the Lord returns is always that we can be as gods, that we can achieve heaven or utopia without the cross. That is the lie.
Yes.
That at this point is essentially what the Democratic Party has become. They're leaning into socialism and communistic Marxist ideas that push God out and say that we can get you there without the cross. It is a staggering temptation. And if you don't have real wisdom from God, it's hard to resist the temptation.
Yes, it is. You know, and the temptation I'm talking about is when the second temptation of Christ in the wilderness. And think about how long Satan had to prepare for this. Eons of time. He knew that day would come. He'd meet Christ who hadn't eaten in the wilderness. And here's the moment. He said, you can have all this. Well, the temptation that Jesus said no to, virtually an entire generation of American pastors said yes to. If you will bow down, remove the discipleship, or take the demands of holiness off of the people of God. Don't require them to accept the inerrancy of Scripture. Give them the murky, kind of New Age church growth slant. And that's how we were caught flat-footed. That's why from the pulpit, pastors simply said, political involvement is not where we belong. You got to look at yourself, enhance yourself, find your identity. And this is not how Christian soldiers ever thought before. It was a new idea, and it was a temptation where a deal was made with the devil. I'll give you multi-campus, massive empire for your faith and your people, but I won't let you be aware of the absolute bankruptcy of it and the disaster that it will heap on the nation. I truly believe that as much as we can blame college professors, absolutely demonic news media, there is also a lot of responsibility in the American pulpit for what we didn't say, what we didn't equip, and what we exchanged to have this massive church growth.
Now, I know that you have seen healings and all kinds of supernatural things. I want to touch on that because I know that there are many in the church who either reject that totally or who just ignore it. They kind of pretend like you can just have some kind of a spiritless Christianity. They might use the term spirit, but they haven't really experienced anything. You've experienced this. When you talk about breaking demonic spells to release a great awakening, you've experienced some of this reality of the spirit world.
Yes, I have. You know, I was on the campus. I studied C.S. Lewis, Francis Schaeffer, G.K. Chesterton, and I wanted to be a Christian apologist. And I believe that's valid. I do believe that we've allowed men like Ben Shapiro and Jordan Peterson to steal some of our thunder because we could have been the virtue voices of our generation if we had done our homework. But at Berkeley, the Lord said, you'll never break through to these radical leftists without supernatural power. And one day we held a rally in which we said we would pray for the sick. And I was ill prepared for the moment. I didn't have any music, no choir. There was no repetitious
worship. What year roughly are we talking about when this happened? What year?
1970. There, okay. Very roughly, wow. 1970.
Yeah.
And I was a kid. I was a little kid, just fresh out of high school, and actually younger than the university students. That's what made it so, strange. And so one day in the back of this crowded little chapel where we had one of our first rallies, some kids off the street, because Telegraph Avenue was also a place with a lot of homeless kids and drug addicts. Well, they plopped a young man who was unconscious on the back couch. And he had injected a mixture of heroin and LSD in the back of his knee, went to the free clinic. And the friends of his were afraid, because he was unconscious, that he would die and that they would be held responsible for illegal drugs. So they brought him to our chapel because we said we would pray for the sick. And they plopped him in the back. And there is a part of God that's really hard to understand, is his sovereignty. Because all of a sudden, this young man, not even a Christian, not even believing in God, and he woke up. And his coma left him, and all of the features of his illness vanished in front of all of us. He runs to the front. And this is where my theology was scrambled. He runs to the front where I'm preaching, falls on the floor on his knees, and starts crying out and saying, why would God do this? He said, I hate God. And he was using four-letter words. I hate God. Why would God do this for me? And that literally launched us on the university campus. And it wasn't without persecution, but it took something undeniable like that to happen, to glorify God. And that began it. And then since that time, we've seen many things. Now, the gift of healing has been commercialized. It's been the victim of men and women who have fallen morally. And anytime there is a weapon that is a weapon of great potential, Satan must try to counterfeit it. But to me,
you've got another break coming. I apologize.
Sure.
Forgive me, just because we've got a hard break here. We'll be right back to pick up with that very sentence. Don't go away, folks.
I know my heart can stay with my love.
This interview Eric had with Mario Murillo was recorded before the big election.
Folks, I'm talking to Mario Murillo, the author of Vessels of Fire and Glory, Breaking Demonic Spells Over America to Release a Great Awakening. Mario, you were just telling us how, and this is, I've seen this myself, the greatest gifts of God, whether it is sexuality, the ability to bring life into existence, whether it is the ability to heal the sick or raise the dead, all of these things are what the enemy goes after to pervert, to twist, to discredit. So you have seen that. In other words, as you move in this supernatural stuff, you've seen how oftentimes people disbelieve it simply because they've seen counterfeit. They've seen phonies.
One thing that I know is that you don't connect healing and money. You have to uncouple that. Those two subjects of giving and healing, it's you might as well play with fork lightning if you start to put a price tag on someone being healed. Next is that miracles are only, the Bible says these signs will follow them that believe. We're not to follow the signs, they're to follow us. And that what they follow is, in the Living Bible is the best description I've ever seen in Acts 14, verse 3. It says, and God proved that their message was from him by giving them power to work great miracles. It was the message that mattered. The message that mattered. When Peter in Acts 4, 29 asked for miracles, he said, Lord, grant unto your servants that with all boldness they may preach your word, your message. And while you stretch out your hand to heal, let signs and wonders be done in the name of your holy servant, Jesus. The fact is, the average preacher today doesn't even know what the gospel is, doesn't know the organic demands of Christ when he went around saying, this is why I'm talking to you. This is what God requires of you. This is why all of these miracles happen. These are secondary to the being conformed to the image of Christ, which is what it's all about.
I need to ask you, do you pastor a church? What kind of ministry do you have right now, and where is it?
I am full-time in tent crusades. We just finished a tent crusade in Fresno, California, where nearly 1,000 people came forward in 6 nights. And the church is unified. We challenged Gavin Newsom on the California turf, and we won. So that's what I do. And it is a wonderful experience under our tent. I don't know of any atmosphere that can match the tent, but it is just the simple message of Christ, the cross, the blood, the resurrection, the second coming. And we have a team that knows how to get un-Christian, unchurched people into the seats. We know how to get the home.
Yes, that's the way to do it. That's called evangelism, in case anybody's scoring at home.
Yes,
that's called evangelism. Let me ask you, if people want to find you online. Now, the book, of course, is Vessels of Fire and Glory by Mario Murillo. But if people want to find you online, what's the website?
It's simple. MarioMurillo.org. MarioMurillo.org.
Couldn't be simpler. M-U-R-I-L-L-O, MarioMurillo.org. I just want to say that when you say that there are there's a prophetic significance of the Valley of Dry Bones, that Ezekiel prophecy. Talk about that, if you could.
You know, when I hark back to that, when Ezekiel was picked up by God, he didn't know what was going on. And the bones are absolutely dry and dead as far as the eye can see, north, south, east, and west. And God speaks to Ezekiel and says, prophesy to these bones. And I want to make a statement about that. When he said, prophesy to these bones, God asked him a question first. He said, can these bones live? Now, you can't lie to God in the middle of a situation. He wasn't sure if maybe these bones weren't the bones of prophets that were asked that question and answered it wrong. But he looked at God and he said, only you know. And that's the moment we're in, Eric. We don't know how God's going to save America. It's going to take a phenomenon right. That's outside of our pay scale and our imagination. And when he spoke and he said, I command you, he was not operating just on what he could confess and believe. It transcended that. He said, he admitted, I don't know. You're the only one that knows, but I'm going to obey you. And God's going to speak to people in churches and leaders that God's impossible miracle. I remember the night that Donald Trump won. I remember how certain everyone in the world was that Hillary was going to win. And it was that moment in the middle of the night where something strange began to happen on MSNBC and CNN. This panic slowly drifted across the nation. Who could explain that? And I believe we're on the verge of another one. But again, I want to reiterate, this is not going to be, before there can be a great awakening, there must be a rude awakening. And this is going to be tumultuous. It's not going to be fun or easy or comfortable, but God will spare the nation.
It sounds to me like you're saying that you believe the president will win re-election.
I believe that on election night, either he's going to be re-elected or the overwhelming majority of America will reject the results. And we will have an unprecedented moment in American history that harks all the way back to the Civil War. I truly believe that this is why it would be best for Democrats if Donald Trump won. That would be the merciful outcome for them.
I'm not sure that I'm following. Why do you say that? In other words, you're saying that either he's going to win or what?
Or I believe that the overwhelming majority of the nation is going to reject the election results. They're going to reject it. It's going to feel
like you're saying that if it looks like Biden wins, there's going to be an uprising in the country. See, I actually see it the other way. I think that Trump will win. What's that?
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I say I think that Trump will win, and I think that the left will reject it and that they will riot in the streets. I hope that's not the case, but that's the sense that I get.
Yeah, I understand that it can go either way. I sense that Trump is going to win. I see every indication. When the polls tell you it's close, that means Trump's way ahead. That's what that means. And I suspect my conviction is that he's going to win. But I'm saying that if he loses, we will see something that we haven't seen in America since the Civil War. And
hang on right there. We have a final segment. Coming up with Mario Murillo, MarioMurillo.com. Don't go away.
We continue now with Eric's interview with Mario Murillo, recorded before the big election.
I'm talking to Mario Murillo. You can find his website, MarioMurillo.com. The book is Vessels of Fire and Glory, Breaking Demonic Spells Over America to Release a Great Awakening. We need a great awakening. I think any serious Christian understands that. When you talk about this election, what do you mean? In other words, if there's civil unrest, what do you suppose it will lead to? Because I get the idea that we are so divided that there will be unrest. I'm so sorry to say that, but I fear that may be what happens.
Yeah, I believe that if Trump were to be not declared the winner, that we would see a phenomenon we haven't seen in America since the Civil War. I'm not talking about a hot war necessarily. I'm not dismissing that possibility. But what I'm saying is that the base that is loving America, loving the flag, sick to death of wokeness, have no more desire for their children to have the stories read to them by their children, drag queens and legalizing pedophilia and all of the rest of it. There is a groundswell that will be seen. I don't know personally what form it'll take, but I believe that it would be merciful for the left if Trump won, because what they're capable of doing, I've looked at Antifa. See, I saw the protesters in the 70s, 60s and 70s. I saw them. They're, Antifa is like they came from the Renaissance Fair over to protest. They're nothing compared to what I saw in Berkeley. I saw 40,000 protesters at a time that could literally decimate an entire city. But on the right, the patriots of America, very educated, understand their rights, very outspoken, are capable of something far, far transcending what the left can do. And I know that's true. But I believe God will have mercy on us. We won't see that because Trump will win. The left will stage an uprising. But we're noticing right now today with Amy Coney Barrett, we didn't see the firestorm that we expected like we had with Kavanaugh. I believe a similar mercy is awaiting us on election night. Something's going to happen to blunt. What we need is for Trump to win the popular vote and the Electoral College. He needs to win them both. I believe he will.
And we need to take back the House. That would be good. We're going through tough times. In your book, Vessels of Fire and Glory, you say breaking demonic spells. We've just got about a minute left. Talk about that, if you could, please.
Well, again, it's been an honor to be with you because I love your writings. I love the preciseness and the clarity. Here is a message for this hour, ladies and gentlemen. In prayer and in outspokenness, the church speaking out and understanding what we believe, what we know, we can stop Satan's agenda for America. We have to know that's possible. God wants to give America one more era of peace and prosperity for the gospel to get out and for revival to happen. God is telling people in Vessels of Fire and Glory, he's calling to himself a core of people who are very prophetic, very hungry to save this nation, who are praying. But now, on top of prayer, they will be given gifts and messages from God that will enforce a reformation, which is what we need. Not just a revival, not just an awakening, but a reformation.
Wow. That's a great place to end. I look forward, Mario Murillo, to meet you, to meeting you in person.
Yes.
Thank you for your time. Thank you for your message. Thanks for the book, Vessels of Fire and Glory. And again, folks can find you at MarioMurillo.com. To be continued, brother. God bless you.
I hope so. God bless you. What an honor.